Hey, just do the intro to MyMac 136 there, Chad.
All right, MyMac 136.
No, that was boring. Do it again.
MyMac 136 podcast.
The next generation of radio. It's the MyMac.com podcast.
Yeah, see, even the announcer guy sounds more exciting than you. My name is Tim, and I am the publisher of MyMac.com, and I don't really care right now. It's, you know.
Well, my name's Chad. I'm not the publisher.
No, and we've got some other guy on Skype. Get it, some other guy.
Yeah, cute.
This is a comedy show.
You spent like the last week working on a little cool video, guy.
Yeah.
What's that all about? You going to post it online soon or what?
Yeah, well, you know, I sent you kind of a preview for it, and you were right. Yeah, the beginning titles were just
Did you look at it?
Oh, yeah.
Boy, it was like 30 seconds into it, we're still seeing about and who did it.
And the whole video. Mother. Thank you, mother. Yeah.
The whole video is like 15 seconds, the actual video, but the intro is like a minute and a half.
Well, I want to give credit where credit is due.
Because that way he doesn't have to spend that long on a spiel at the Oscars.
Yeah, you know, I kept hearing that an iPod was in the Transformers movie. So I assumed that meant one of the Transformer guys' robots was like an iPod. No.
No.
It just had some guy at the beginning wearing an iPod listening to music on a helicopter or something.
Yeah.
I was like, well,
that's relevant.
Well, but you would think that Apple, in their wisdom, could have had an Autobot good guy as an iPod.
But what I thought was impressive was that when every other computer got hacked by that virus, the guy from Section 7 pulls out his MacBook Pro and starts running and saying, hey, here's the issue you got here.
Yeah.
Not even space robots can hack a Mac.
That should have been the intro for this week's show. Transformers, podcasts in disguise.
That would have been funny. Did you see it yet, Guy?
Yeah. No, I haven't seen it yet. My son Guy really, really wants to see it. He's only 12, and
That's the gone. Audience.
It is.
Yeah. Well, he's gone from like, you know, Marvel and DC action figures, and now everything has to be Transformers.
Yeah, that's understandable.
And I was telling him, I said, you know, Guy, you know, these toys were like really, really hugely popular 20 years ago.
You know, what was funny is the opening credits in association with Hasbro. I started cracking up. I was like, wow. Of course, that was a cartoon that was based around a toy line.
It was.
Not the other way around.
And Milton Bradley Games.
Yeah.
So, were there any GoBots?
Wrong one. I've actually seen the last two nights, that being Tuesday and Wednesday, I saw two movies in two nights.
What'd you see?
I saw Ratatouille and then Transformers.
Which are the last two that I saw as well.
Yeah.
Not with you, though.
I still haven't seen Ratatouille. I still haven't seen, you know, Transformers. I still haven't seen Pirates of the Caribbean.
I haven't seen Pirates.
Simpsons are coming out soon.
I want to see Pirates still, and I want to see Die Hard. So.
Yeah, I do want to see Die Hard. Totally. So.
Anyways, what's that got to do with Mac? Nothing.
Nothing.
Not a damn thing.
But there's not a lot, not a damn thing going on in the Mac world except for, the thing that everybody's talking about, which...
What?
Yeah, you know.
I don't know. What?
The predicted iPhone Nano, which you talked about last week.
Yeah, you know, I never heard about that before, and then I mentioned it last week.
And then suddenly it's popping up everywhere.
Yeah, imagine that.
You wonder if somebody just happened to listen to the podcast and just... picked it up.
Well, now some guy from CBS Market Watch is talking about it, and it made Apple's stock price jump.
Is there anything that doesn't make Apple's stock price jump?
I think this is kind of like the butterfly. And I'm not saying my idea was an original one. I'm sure someone else came up with it 5 minutes after they heard about the iPhone. But it was the first one that I publicly heard. Maybe somebody else was talking about it. But
yeah, Steve Jobs scratches his nose and the stock goes up.
Well, it's like the butterfly effect, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, did you see the new release? Well, it's not a new release, but it's a update to QuickTime that actually allows the free version to play movies and videos full screen.
Which is about stinking time.
You know, that Apple had been nickeling and diming QuickTime users to death. Oh, you want to watch something full screen on your Mac? You got to pay $29.99.
Mm-hmm.
I've been a QuickTime Pro user for years. I mean, because I do a lot of video stuff.
Three or 4 years for me.
And it's worth $20.
Oh, absolutely.
Or $30.
Yeah.
But I always thought, you know, you should be able to watch the casual person downloading QuickTime to watch videos should be able to watch them full screen on their Mac.
Yeah.
Well, especially movies, you know, movies and videos and stuff that they've gotten off of iTunes.
Right. And plus, the reason I think Apple did this, I think someone at Apple finally thought, you know what makes sense, is because if you're watching a movie in QuickTime or in iTunes, it's mm-hmm. full screen. You don't see anything else yep. with the screen, but the picture. But if you watch the same video in QuickTime, you have to see your desktop and your dock and all that. You couldn't yeah. go full screen. And iTunes is free, so why not roll that feature into the free version of QuickTime?
That's right.
Makes sense to me, and I'm sure that that's probably exactly why they did it.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think, Guy? Think that's the reason?
I would agree. Yeah. You know, I mean, if there was just no reason to... You know, it's something that should have been done a long time
Absolutely.
Ago.
Yeah. I agree with you. It seemed like a petty little nickel and dime thing. It's like, ooh, we can try to make a couple extra bucks. But I think QuickTime Pro is definitely worth $30.
Absolutely.
That shouldn't have been, you know, a reason.
But it shouldn't have been a restriction just limited only to
QuickTime worth
Pro.
It's worth $30 just for the
export.
Just for the
yeah.
Yeah, yeah, just for the different codecs that you can export yep. it to.
So I see Apple had a purchase back in February. It's just now being reported. Apple Incorporated has bought Cups, the common Unix printing system. I guess that makes sense with Unix being at the core of Apple.
Right.
I wonder how much acquiring Apple has done over the last year that we really don't know about. How many smaller companies have they picked up? But as
it's the Google effect.
You know, as a public company, though, aren't they supposed to disclose all that? I mean, how does that work? I'm not a stock analyst or anything.
I believe they have a certain grace period before they have to disclose it, but eventually they do have to disclose it.
Interesting. A new website launched for Mac users called My First Mac Website, or My First Mac. I believe it's at myfirstmac.com. No, I have nothing to do with it, but it's kind of for new Mac users, and it answers a lot of questions for them, like what should you buy other than your new Mac, and what do you need, and what's recommended, and, you know, I think there's definitely a place for that with all the recent switchers over to the Mac platform, a website that could help people mm-hmm. out with their new purchases. It's nicely laid
yes,
out.
Yes, it is,
and,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah, it is. It's not bad.
No, it's not bad at all. So welcome to the web, whoever owns it and publishing it, and I think I hope it becomes a very good resource for new Mac users. And, you know, I was thinking about this earlier. Why are users of the Macintosh platform so passionate? How many Dell PC, Windows Vista type of podcasts are out there that's dedicated to Dell or Vista? Or there's a couple, don't get me wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But next to how many are surrounding the Mac platform, it's nothing. It's... Why do we have this kind of a passion for a simple operating system? Why is that?
Well, I think it's probably a little bit more than that. You know, just using a Mac instead of Windows, just in a lot of cases, just make people feel different.
You know, I was thinking about this as well, that even the most diehard liberal VW Prius driver, anti-corporate person... seems to love Apple as a company. Why is that?
Well, unless they're with Greenpeace.
Well, no, I think Greenpeace does as well. Mm. I think they just did that because they knew it would get them a lot of attention.
Right.
That's the only reason Greenpeace went after Apple at all, because, hey, it's Apple. We're going to get attention if we host some events during the expo and, you know. But, yeah, it seems like everybody, the alternate crowd really seems to like Apple.
Mm-hmm.
Even those who hate big companies. And Apple's a big company.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they own... What's that?
Getting bigger every day.
Yeah, well, they own the music download, legal download service. Mm-hmm. They own that market.
Yep.
They own the iPod market. Nobody else is making any portable music players that are selling in significant numbers mm-hmm. now.
No.
We'll see what they do with the iPhone, with the cell phone market, but they're definitely going to shake it up, if nothing else. Mm-hmm. The Mac is gaining more and more market share every year now, every mm-hmm. month it seems. And yet, these anti-establishment, peacenik liberals, me.
Yeah.
love Apple. Why is that?
Because it's a user-focused company.
You think so?
I think they design products with a customer in mind.
See, I don't. I think they design the products that they think are the best, and that and they happen to be the best. Mm-hmm. And as users, we are the we reap those benefits. But I don't think Apple designs anything with you or me in mind at all.
Well, not necessarily. Not necessarily.
Not Chad Perry or Tim Robertson, per se. But.
Well, Apple's famous for not having focus groups. They don't have focus groups on products. And, well, you know, our focus group testing shows this, so this is the kind of product we should make. That's not how Apple's run. We all know that.
Well, the problem is that focus groups are not always very accurate.
I agree.
I think if you ever read the book Blink by Malcolm, can't remember his last name now. But he talks about that.
Really?
And how focus groups are not always the best way to do things. You know, and one of the big examples he uses is the whole Coke Pepsi thing. When
Samuel E. Stone.
What?
That's the name of the author.
For Blink?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, thank you. My fault.
When you look at what Apple does, I think Apple, and they've done this since the very beginning, they, for the longest time, has been Steve Jobs. Designs the products that he wants. And he just knows in his heart of hearts that we're going to follow, we being the public.
Mm-hmm.
That once you use his products, you're going to see how much better they are. And you're just going to use them because you're going to want them. You're going to lust after them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you see it with the iPhone recently. But it was the same. The same was true with the Apple II when that came out. Mm-hmm. The original Macintosh. The iPod,
mm-hmm.
and we're not even talking about software yet. I mean, it, consistently, Apple makes a product so far ahead of the curve,
mm-hmm.
that everybody else scrambles to catch up. Sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. In fact, mm-hmm. most times they don't, because Apple continuously stays ahead of that curve.
Mm-hmm.
And we, as the loyal users, are
the beneficiaries
of that technology. Mm-hmm. But I don't think Apple does it to make us happy. I think they just simply make the stuff that they know is cool, will work, but I don't think they have us in mind when they create it. I really don't.
Because so you're thinking he's like the Willy Wonka, they're like the Willy Wonka of technology?
In some respects,
just sit in the chocolate factory and pump out what we like?
In some respects, yeah. In some respects, because
you can't get them to wear the hat.
Yeah. They obviously made mistakes by the whole Cube fiasco.
Yeah.
Some would say even the Newton was not big sellers for Apple. They lost money on, like, the Cube.
Right.
So Apple hasn't hit a home run every time. But I don't think those were created with the the Newton was. But that was really not with Steve Jobs either.
Yeah, but if you want to take that a little bit further, you know, I always hear people talking about, well, you know, the only hit product Apple's ever had has been the iPod, and you know, I keep saying that they don't have to have iPod or, you know, Microsoft Windows numbers for a product to be considered successful.
No, I agree.
The Macintosh has been out now for 23 years. And you don't keep making a product for that long a period of time if it isn't successful.
Oh, and you can even go further back. The Apple II was hugely successful, even though if you look at the numbers that they sold with the Apple II, it's nothing compared to today's numbers of just iPod sales alone.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know.
Oh, by the way, I screwed up. It was Malcolm Gladwell who wrote that book.
I knew it was Malcolm.
Yeah, that's what you said, Chad. 5 slashes with a wet noodle for you guys. You know, I just think that Apple really doesn't design products with us in mind. I think they design products that Steve Jobs or the other folks at Apple, and I think Steve Jobs probably gets a little bit more credit than he deserves all the time, but they design products that they want, that they like, that they're going to use, and they just know we're going to follow suit because it is that cool and nobody else is doing anything like it. The only reason the iPhone is successful, it's not because it has a touch screen or any of that stuff. It's the software. The software in every other cell phone out there blows.
Mm-hmm.
It blows. And the more I play with my cell phone, the more I want to go out and get an iPhone because I can't stand my phone. I want an iPhone. Not because it's the hot new thing or anything like that, but because I could actually take advantage of it. I would love to be able to browse the internet wherever I'm at, as long as there's a hotspot or I've got a good connection. You know,
I'd like to suck my contact list into my phone from my Apple and update it that way.
Yeah, exactly.
Because it's really where it resides right now. I mean, now that I don't use a Palm Pilot anymore,
it's all on your computer.
Yeah,
or your cell phone.
Yeah,
and
can't get in between the two. Yeah,
I think I can do it with my phone, but it's so convoluted that I don't even want to buy.
You know, I'll be honest. My what is this cell phone? I'll pull it out and look because I'm just not sure. It's a Motorola. I don't even know if
I got Motos too.
You know, it doesn't say what it is. And that should tell you something right there.
Yeah, but I bet it's got your cell phone provider's name on it.
So. Yeah, of course. Altel right there on it. I don't know what this is. It's got the same software that the Razer has. And I'll give it credit that if I had to buy a USB to this phone adapter plug, which was like $6 at, I don't know, Target or wherever I got it, and I plugged it into my Mac, went to iSync, it saw it, I hit sync, and it did sync everything between my address book and this phone. It synced it just fine. Mm-hmm. So there was no problem there, except for it wasn't intelligent enough to say, oh, he's already got this contact in with the same phone number, so I had dupes all over the place. Oh.
Well, would it dupe it again if you resync?
Yeah, it would, unfortunately. What I have to do is create a master list on, like, the computer and then completely erase this phone and then sync it, and then it will be good.
Mm.
But I have found that that's goofy. I don't know. But the software sucks. I hate using this phone. But I do like the fact that it flips closed, and if I break it, I'm not, you know, not going to be...
You're going to out $600.
So I called Altel this week. Because I was kind of curious when my service contract expires, January.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm sure they haven't gotten any.
And the guy says to me after I said, I'm just curious when my plan expires. Click, 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 click. Well, I've got two lines, one in the beginning of January, one at the end of January. I said, okay. And that's like $200 if I just canceled one of the lines. Yep, that's correct, sir. And he goes, "Why? If I may ask, why are you asking?" I said, well, I was just kind of curious.
Yeah, I just wanted to know.
He goes, you're looking at the iPhone, right?
Yeah, don't look at the iPhone.
And I said, yeah, actually. And he goes, well, after reading the reports online, I don't think I want one of those. And I was you're full of it. Give me a what reports? Talk about following the company line.
Yeah.
But what else are they going to do?
There was that report on Altel.com.
Yeah. It was on Altel.com that said, it's not a good product. So
I'm getting a better phone, Chad.
iPhone causes sterility in Wales. Yeah.
But here's the thing. My cell phone bill is my wife's and mine in one.
Right.
And it's about $82 a month. If I went with the plan for the iPhone, I would want at least the 1,000 minutes, or it's 900 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
That's about $80 a month with 200 SMS messages, which I would never use 200 in a month. No. Never. I doubt if I would use more than 10, if that. And then it's just I'll text edit my wife, love you. So, you know, who am I text editing? Yeah. You know, or texting?
Text messaging.
Texting. Text editing. So I went to the Mac program. See how I am. So I mean, it's features that I never use. It does have a built-in camera, but I actually used my video camera on here, Chad. And here, I'll let you see it. I know it doesn't help on during a podcast. So you know those little kiosks?
Did you see the pictures that Bill Palmer took?
No, I didn't. Do you know those little kiosks? I'll get back to that in a second, guy.
Okay.
At like Target or Walmart or wherever, where you could go up and push the button and it plays different albums and stuff?
Yeah.
My daughter, the 4-year-old Brooke, loves those. So we were at Target Monday or something, and she goes up and she's pushing it, and she's dancing with it. So I videotaped her with my cell phone, and she's doing this little dance, and it's cuter than hell. So in some respects, it's kind of nice to have the cell phone where I can record something quick like that. The quality's horrible, but you could see it, and you get and see, you start laughing because it's funny and it's cute. She's shaking her little butt. Uh-huh. She looks back at the camera and sees that I've got the phone pointed at her. So she bends over and really wiggles her little butt. It's funny, you know. And you're not going to whip out a full-size video camera and try to capture that because there's no... As soon as she saw a camera, she'd boop, it would stop.
Yeah.
But So it's kind of nice to have that little video camera, but I think it would be even better on an iPhone. Mm-hmm. But does the iPhone do video or is it just pictures?
Just pictures, isn't
it? Just pictures, isn't it?
Just pictures, yeah. And it's only like 2 megapixel camera,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah, so that's kind of cheap.
Not that great.
Yeah, I think my phone's 2 megapixels as well, maybe 1.3, but it takes horrible pictures. It looks like crap.
Yeah, mm-hmm. You know, honestly, considering that the camera itself isn't that big, isn't that great, I don't see why they just didn't, like, not include it. Maybe lower the price just a little bit.
Oh,
if it takes crappy pictures, then why even have it in there?
Yeah, I'm looking at. Are you talking about the Harry Potter pictures?
Yeah.
So if you go to our website, you see a post from Bill Palmer called "Harry Potter Premiere at Grauman's Chinese Theater in Hollywood," and we have. Well, he's posted pictures that he took with his iPhone at the premiere.
Right.
It's not very good pictures, though.
No.
I'm not really impressed, even a little bit. They just movement really looks bad.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. But you know, I kind of expect that.
Plus, it is at night, also. It is at night, also. Yeah.
But I kind of expect that. What's your post up there about new iPods to resemble the iPhone?
Oh, there was somebody that was talking about. Just, oh well, you know what we've heard is that the new iPod is going to look a lot like the iPhone, and it was. As I was reading the story, I was just sitting there thinking, you know, you really didn't have anything to write about this week, did you? You know, I mean, it's just, well, duh. You know, it was a duh moment. Yeah. So, you know, why even write about something like that?
I was posting the podcast on Sunday night for last week's 135. And as I was putting it together, I decided, you know what, I'm tired of our logo for the podcast. And I decided to change it up a little bit. And so we do have a new podcast logo. If you go to mymac.com, look on the right-hand side, you'll see it. Hopefully it'll be updated in iTunes as well soon.
That looks very familiar.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The little character that we're using in that logo is actually going to be the new character for mymac.com. I just haven't got it to work correctly at the top of our website yet and still look good.
Yeah.
So, but it is being used now in the podcast. I kind of like it. I think it looks nice. I got a little RSS kind of thing going in there, and it's plain, but yet it's nice. It's distinctive. You like it, Guy?
Yeah, I do.
Something different. So what else is going on in the Mac world? I know Apple, like I said, bought that company about printing, and iPhone sales are still going strong. And
well, one thing we should talk about, we were talking about the QuickTime and iTunes update. Some people have been reporting that they've been having problems opening certain applications, which also include Microsoft Office and Photoshop CS2. And other users are reporting that their PowerPC-specific applications are having problems.
Really?
Yeah. So what I put down here was that, you know, anyone who's having problems along these lines should go to macfixit.com, and they've got some details on you know, some of the things. Try to do to.
MacFixit is a good site to bookmark and check out maybe once a week or twice a week to see if there's any problems going on that you need to be aware of. Mm-hmm. I usually check with MacFixit before I upgrade a computer to an updated version of the OS or another application that I use all the time. Otherwise, I'll kind of wait.
I did it on my iBook and I didn't have any problems. Of course, that's still, of course, you know, it's a G4, so right. I haven't done it until iMac yet.
Up on the mymac.com website, we've got a book review of Adobe CS3, Classroom in a Book from Rich Lefko. Rich is still a fairly new writer with us, but I got to tell you, I'm impressed with Rich. He, wasn't he a contest winner with us or something on the podcast?
I sure remember now.
I remember getting feedback from him because he was the weather guy. Remember, he had the weather website. So I think he won a contest or something with us. But we posted his first article in January of this year, and surely but steadily, he's been writing more and more and more, and really happy to have Rich up at mymac.com now. I think he's got a lot of potential to turn into a very good writer. He's got the spirit, you know what I mean? That you see in people that you think, you know, they're really going to have fun doing this. Another person that's brand new with mymac.com is Dan Robinson.
Yep.
And he started a new series of articles called Mac Simple. And his first one was posted actually before our last podcast. And it's called Making a Signature for Your Email. In other words, your actual signature in your email. And it's a fairly simple process with Apple's mail program. And
hence the name.
Hence the name. And I've already got part two, or the second article from him, in the queue that will be posted maybe by the time this goes live, but probably not. Probably won't be posted until Tuesday morning. But Dan's another new writer that I'm pleased as punch is at MyMac.com.
Yeah. There's been a lot of new guys coming on board this
year. Yeah, Tom Schmidt is another one.
My brother Larry, Larry Grinnell.
Well, Tom Schmidt is...
Artie Allen Koff.
Yep.
For some reason, every time you say Tom Schmidt, I keep thinking of that old cartoon from the 60s. Tom, what was that? Tom Swift, I think.
Oh, yeah, yeah, Tom Swift and Electric Rifle.
Yep.
Yeah. Tom Schmidt. Da-da-da-da-da. Okay, never mind. Never mind.
Update on my Simpsons movie.
Yeah, I think I was just looking at that. Yep. I think we probably need to talk about that.
Yeah, it didn't win. No. Michigan came third from last.
Oh.
I think a lot of that has to do with the media coverage here in our area. Mm-hmm. Nobody covered it.
Oh, I would say the local TV station did pimp it a couple times and told people to go out there and check it out and vote. So they did pimp you a couple times.
I actually saw a story on the whole Simpsons video thing on CNN. I think it was two, 3 days ago, which was last Monday or Tuesday.
I saw that too, and they didn't mention us or show any of the clips.
Well, no, they did. The one I saw, they did mention you guys, or they did mention your video. You know, they didn't have your name on it. They did mention the Michigan video, and they did show like a little 5 second blip from it. I don't remember exactly, you know, what part it was off the top of my head.
What'd they say about it? Just that it was out there?
Yeah. Well, you know, the ones they showed most of, they showed, you know, the guy chasing
the Vermont. Yeah.
Well, that's the one that won.
Yeah. And they showed really? And they showed the one where the people, you know, painted their skin yellow, and
that was bad.
Yeah. Well, most of them were. Yeah. I didn't even care, really, to be honest. The one that won with him chasing the donut just seemed to be overlong, and it was like a one-line joke. Yeah.
Well, here's what gets me is we got 2,516 votes. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't sound right to me. I mean, the winning video only got 15,363. That doesn't seem like very many people for as many links as I saw to this contest.
Yeah.
If even half the people, less than half the people listening to this podcast right now would have went there and voted for the Michigan entry, we'd have won.
True.
So those numbers seem very strange to me. If you add all those up and figure out how many people actually voted, that's not even 100,000 people.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't seem right to me, but don't get me wrong. I'm not saying this because I've got sour grapes or anything like that.
But
I didn't really. Well, I'm a little disappointed that we didn't win, but I did not expect to win with only 3 weeks to produce it. There's
I expected us to do better than what we did.
Oh, I'm with you. But we didn't win, so no biggie. Moving on. what else is going up? John Nemo, and I really like this one. It's a part one. He's going to have a part two here pretty soon. Nemo Memo travels with Techie, and he basically lays out the gear he takes with him when he goes on trips.
Yep.
If you're traveling a lot and you're kind of a gearhead tech gadget guy, this is going to be something that you're really going to look at, because he's got some great advice and he's got a list of the products that he uses.
And Nemo has reviewed a lot of travel gear for techies, so he knows what he's talking about.
Yeah. Yep. Tom Schmidt, like we were talking about earlier, did a review of the Otherworld Computing Mercury PowerBook G4 SuperDrive. So if you've got an older PowerBook G4 and you're like, I'd really like to be able to burn DVDs with it, Otherworld Computing's got you covered. He gives it a four out of five. Tom Schmidt was doing the, and this is something else I want to talk about a little bit here briefly. He was doing the articles for MyMac.com about the help desk, right?
Yep.
If you have problems with your Mac, send him your questions. He'll answer it. But he wasn't getting
any requests for help.
Really.
Yeah.
And when you look at our numbers, how many people visit our site on a monthly basis, even if 1% of that number sent him a question, he would be inundated with email. So why didn't that happen? I think that the time for help type of columns has passed. I don't really think, at least as far, I think it's there's merit in them, but not to answer specific questions that someone may submit. Because I think nowadays, when you have a question, well, how do I do this? You're not sending an email off and hoping that you get a reply anytime soon.
You're going to Google it.
You're going to Google it, get the answer immediately, and move on.
Mm-hmm.
The internet really has changed these help desk type of columns in that you're not going to get a lot of people submitting questions to you. Because, number one, you got to have someone out there that knows about your column, that's having a problem, and that is thoughtful enough to send you what that problem is, the question.
Assuming that they can send it if they're computer.
Right.
Exactly. And those are a lot of things has to happen that you're just going to Google it. You're just going to get the answer immediately and move on. And you're not going to think, oh, I should send that in to Tom Schmidt so he can have that in his column and it'll help somebody else out in the future. Mm-hmm. You remember that problem I had years ago when the G5 died and had the keys out of order on the boot sector disk and nothing I could do saved it. And my convoluted fix was starting up in FireWire mode through another computer in Mac OS 9, but only with extensions off. I mean, you know, it was so convoluted that...
Right.
If I wasn't so anal, I never would have came up with that answer myself. But I did come up with the answer, and I posted it at least once a month. And this was like 3-4 years ago now. At least once a month, I'll still get an email from someone saying, thank you very much for that. It's a very rare problem, but when someone has it, I mean, it seemed, you can't even boot from a CD to fix it. Because it's at the boot part of the initialization of that drive. You cannot do anything. It's dead. Dead to the world. You can't even do it under classic Mac, or booting it under Mac OS 9. Still won't do it. It will not boot because it hits that sector and it's dead. But it did when I held down the extensions because then it doesn't look at it. So it was a workaround that I don't think very many people would ever come up with. So most people that have this problem would just simply throw away the drive. You can't erase it. You can't do anything. It's just gone. And where else are you going to find an answer to that? You can't send someone an email, and I'm sure that Tom never would have even come up with that solution. I mean, it's so convoluted. I just got lucky when I came up with it. And that was, some of the answers to it came from Owen Rubin. He was one, I think, suggested to start up an OS 9 on a second machine in target mode, and that still didn't work, but it did once I did it with extensions off. But, you know, you have to share that information on the internet. So if somebody else has a problem, they're going to find it. They're going to find the solution. You're really going to save someone some money and some aggravation. Not that everybody's got an older Mac sitting around that happens to have FireWire and running classic Mac. And significant moment for me this week, I actually retired the G4.
You did?
The dual processor, 500 megahertz dual processor G4. I finally took it to the basement.
You did.
It was doing nothing. Collecting
I thought
dust.
You had it working for as a server.
No, well, yeah, I, but, for some services, but then I just turned the Mac Mini into that. And Mini takes a lot less power. And for what the G4 was doing, the you know, the Mac Mini was just it's faster, kinda. But
well, that's a G4 as well, though.
Yeah, it is. Yep, it's a G4. Mac Mini.
That's like a, what, a 1.2
gigabytes, gigahertz. What I did like about the dual processor G4, and it's still faster in one respect than the G5 that I'm still using, is that it had a 10,000 RPM SCSI 3 hard drive in it that was just a screaming barracuda, man. It was, you would hit like a 4 gigabyte file and hit duplicate like that. I mean, it just... You could hear.
Is that a 10? Is that a 10K drive too?
Yeah, 10,000.
Wow.
It was RPS. Just super fast, and that was nice, but that wasn't enough reason to keep it there. So I copied everything off that machine to one external 250 gigabyte FireWire drive, and retired that machine to the basement. But it's still it's a significant moment for me that you know, I really like that machine for you remember. I loved that machine for a long time and I never really had any serious problems with it. But it just it's so big and it just doesn't make sense to keep it going any longer than I needed to.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, there's very little that I really need the Mac Mini running for.
Yeah.
You know, that's what am I going to do on that Mac Mini that I can't do with either my MacBook Pro
or a G5?
Or the G5. It's just nothing.
Well, what are you using it for?
Downloading stuff, sharing files over the network.
Oh, between the various machines?
Yeah. Yep. Okay. Some printing services. But it's all stuff I could do on the G5. But the G5 has to be on and not asleep.
Well, you know, but for that matter, you could use the new Apple AirPort Extreme and do all those things. Just hook up an external USB drive to it.
Yeah, I could. But it was just easier that, I mean, I have the Mac Mini. Why spend more money when I already have the Mac Mini?
Oh, this is a money thing.
Yeah, well. But you were talking about getting rid of some gear earlier before we started recording, Guy. What are you getting rid of? And why?
Yeah, I got rid of some old furniture that I had down here in the office, and I basically got for a fantastic price a computer desk that I ended up having to modify extensively in order to fit my 24-inch iMac underneath it. And I also retired my old Canon printer for a new Canon printer because basically, the old one wouldn't print in black anymore, and you know I kind of need that.
Mm-hmm.
So you're gonna just toss it out, or?
Well, I've got Salvation Army coming tomorrow, so I'm gonna give them the printer and a couple of the cartridges that I still have, and if somebody else can get it to work, great. Either way, I'm taking it off on my taxes.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, and, you know that's significant too. We did that with clothes last year, and. Holy smokes! That was a big tax write-off. We're like, holy, they're going to give away more.
We got this every year.
Holy moly!
You have to be careful.
It has to be declared.
Start claiming. Yeah, if you start trying to declare too much, then you know you end up on the radar.
No, and we wouldn't do that. We wouldn't falsify it or anything.
You don't want to be on the radar. No, it's not a matter of falsifying it. You know, even if it's all legitimate, who wants to be audited?
I got audited when I was 16 years old. I worked a part-time job
really?
at the same place my dad worked. And the lady who did all the bookkeeping put my Social Security under his name and his under mine. So like 2 years later, I get this notice from the IRS when I was 18, but this was for when I was 16, wanting to know why I didn't declare X thousand dollars more. And, you know, that they were informing that this was an informal blah, blah, blah. You were going to be audited. And we had it taken care of pretty easily, but you know, when you're 18 years old and the IRS is like, we're gonna audit you, you're like,
panic!
But you know, the funny thing is, they didn't bother my dad by declaring less but paying more in taxes than he should have by declaring that amount of money.
No,
imagine that. They're like, ooh, look at, he gave us a bonus.
So they got extra money and didn't give it back.
Yeah,
is that
pretty
what
much. But you know, the bookkeeper took care of it and it was an easy fix, and so. No harm, no foul, but still, when you're 18 years old and you find out you're going to get audited by the IRS, that's a
heart-stopping
experience. Yeah. Can't breathe. So there's just not a lot going on in the Mac world. We do have a fenestration coming up, as well as some audio from Robert Hazelrig. So Chad, Guy, and myself are going to wrap it up now. We'll get to those other segments. We'll be back next week. Hopefully something cool will happen in the Mac world. Maybe one of the three of us will buy an iPhone, though I doubt it. And we'll talk about what's going on. If you guys got any suggestions on topics you'd like to hear us talk about, either send an email to mymacpodcast@gmail.com.
Or drop us a line on our Skype line, which is 1-801-938-5559.
But the only person leaving messages recently has been Robert Hazelrig.
Yeah.
And, we're just not, people just aren't picking up the phone and calling.
It's summertime, baby.
It's summertime, that's true.
Got to go outside.
And but we're always looking for more feedback. If you'd like to contribute anything to the show, hey, let us know. We're open to ideas. Maybe we'll have another contest here coming up pretty soon, too. I like doing those. We haven't done one in, I don't know, a whole week now.
I don't get to talk to the contest with us.
Well, next time we'll just let you call in from your end, and we'll just sit tight, and you can ring us back and say, okay, here's an audio file. Drop it in the show. So for Guy, Chad, and myself, we're out of here.
See you.
Hello, Robert Hazelrig here. Today I'd like to talk to you about an event that I went to recently in New York City. The event was the Adobe CS3 Creative License Conference. It was held on June 25th through the 26th at the Waldorf Astoria in New York City. The event was a 2.5-day event. It started off with a Sunday evening dinner, and then first thing on Monday morning, there was a review of future software that's on its way from Adobe. On Monday afternoon, went through a overview of the entire Creative Suite Master Collection. And then all day on Tuesday, there were several sessions that were broken up into individual tracks that highlighted and went over all of the Master Suite collection in finer detail. Now, the thing that really interested me is the future software that's on its way from Adobe. But let me tell you a little bit about the sessions first, and then I'll come on back and let you know more about what I thought was the highlight of the show. I've been to a number of conferences, and many of them very similar to this, and some hosted by Adobe in the past. What I really liked about this conference over all the others that I've attended and been a part of is the fact that all of the tracks that they had offered had two speakers in each session, which was very nice. Let me give you a little bit more of a breakdown of how things worked. So when I talk about a track, that would be an area of expertise that you would be interested in. For instance, there was a web design track. There was just a design track. There was a video track, a print service provider track, and a pro photo track. So if you went to, let's say, you were interested in the design track, the sessions were broken up into segments that you could attend, such as Adobe Photoshop Extended for Designers, followed by Designing with Adobe Illustrator. Whereas in the web design track, there would be, at the same time, be going on a class that was highlighting the new features in Fireworks, followed by the new features in Dreamweaver. And that went on through all the different tracks that I mentioned earlier. The interesting thing about having the dual speakers for each track or session in each track is that while one guy is showing you a feature, the other guy is setting up for the next feature. And so while the one fellow was showing us the new auto-align layers in Photoshop, the next gentleman who was right alongside of him quickly showed off how you could use the Vanishing Point 3D effects in the new Photoshop right after that. I really wanted to make it a point to mention this because so many times when you go see a speaker who's been speaking for several weeks when it comes to showing off the software and all the key points, they don't really stay enthusiastic about it. And they get tired, and after a long day of talking, come the end of the day, you don't get the full benefit of attending one of those sessions because the speaker is so tired. So by tag-teaming the event or the sessions, I actually felt like I got a lot more out of the session had it been just one speaker. If you were unable to attend and really want to learn the Master Suite collection in depth, you should head on over to Terry White's podcast. The name of the podcast is the Adobe Creative Suite, and you can find that in iTunes. And interestingly enough, you will see all of the presentations broken out just as I saw them via their podcast. They have all the tutorials built in right there that were highlighted at the show. Of course, the podcast hasn't broken out all of those tutorials and sessions yet, but there are a number of things there that will help you get up to speed very quickly in the new Master Suite. I actually did get to meet Terry White at the show. I walked up to him, shook his hand, told him I thought he was a rock star to me because his podcast is so excellently produced. I do watch it regularly, and I do enjoy it thoroughly. So, you already know that Adobe is pretty much the industry leader across the board in media creation. Although that's debatable when it comes to video production. I know a lot of Final Cut Pro individuals that would argue that point. But Adobe is really leading the way towards this new Publish 2.0 era, where all media is converging and happening simultaneously online, in print, and moving towards video. Moreover, in Adobe's now 25th year of business, they've really positioned themselves as the industry leader to create and manage all of this content. But you knew all that already. So what stole the show for me? Well, the thing that really knocked my socks off and I thought was very interesting and very cool was Adobe's new Air technology. It used to be called Aero, I believe, but they had to change the name thanks to Microsoft's new operating system, which has a element to it that I believe that's called the same name. Anyway, the Air Media Player, or the Aero Media Player by Adobe, which should be available this fall, is an RSS video player. It's not the same as, say, a QuickTime, although it will play QuickTime movies, and it will play Flash movies, but it is a media player that actually goes out and looks for podcasts, TV shows, what have you, and merges it all together, very similar to, say, an iTunes would, but in a much flashier, Flash-based media player. It was very cool. It was very wild. It looked very easy to use, and I'm very interested in getting my hands on it. It is a standalone player, so it is separate from everything else. I do not believe that there will be a cost to it when it is available. At the event, they were demoing how it catches TV shows and how those TV shows could still incorporate their local television commercials. So, for instance, if you are watching Mind of Mencia and are in the New York area, you would get regionalized advertisements for that show. The reason this excites me is because it's a major threat to cable. So the demo was very cool, and it looks like this is a real leap forward towards the move to IPTV. I hope Adobe is very successful with it. I liked the features that it offered. It is television on demand, and this is a cool catcher that will allow you to watch your shows when you want to watch them as they are released. It's a real, real leap forward. The creative show was a phenomenal success. I had a lot of fun while I was there. And if Adobe is ever in your neck of the woods, you definitely want to take the time to go to one of these shows. It is well worth it. And kudos to you, Adobe, and Terry White. I really enjoyed watching the presentations and learning as much as I did. Well, that's it for me this week. This has been Robert Hazelrig. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for downloading the MyMac.com podcast. You can subscribe to this podcast at our RSS feed at MyMac.com or by visiting the iTunes Music Store's podcast section. Please send all feedback to MyMacPodcast@gmail.com. And thanks for listening to the MyMac.com podcast.